Blog Talk Radio.
More Americans are watching their weight. Many are on reduced fat diets. Yet the demands of everyday life prevent most of us from strictly keeping to our weight management goals, especially when it comes to fatty foods we sometimes consume. Luckily, there's naturally sourced stimulant-free supplement to help eliminate fat from foods called calories. Taken with meals containing fats, clinically tested calories binds with the fat from food and reduces up to 500 calories a day. Calories can give you the edge in managing your weight. Calories helps maintain healthy cholesterol and triglyceride levels as well. Calories needs no prescription and is available at your local GNC, Walgreens, and soon CVS store or online at calories.com. That's CALOREASE.com. This statement has not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inner Spark Radio. I'm your host, Lena Gazarian. And if you want to learn more about our upcoming shows as well as listen to archive shows, just want to remind you, you can go to innersparkradio.com. You can go to Blog Talk Radio, and you can also go to iTunes. And today I'm really looking forward to talking with returning guest Amy Lombardo about changing patterns and raising expectations. And just a quick note to let you know that in April of last year, she did a show that got some really nice feedback. So you might want to check that out. It's called Beyond the Cliche, What You Really Need to Know About Following Your Passion. It was a really good show. So anyway, let me tell you a little bit about Amy. No matter the form of her offering, whether she's playing the role of yoga teacher, strategic entrepreneurial consultant, life coach, writer, public speaker, vlogger, or wellness counselor, Amy Lombardo's intention has always remained the same: create a space for people to connect to their own inherent wisdom, and magic will happen. Also a dedicated karma yogi, deeply committed to the yoga of service, Amy co-founded Karma Crew, a yoga-based nonprofit that sustains a nationwide grassroots network of socially conscious yoga studios and practitioners in over 50 cities and 4 countries. In her latest venture, her vlog, Confessions of a Warrior Woman, Amy hones in on her passion for women's empowerment, providing her audience with real-life examples and heartfelt, practical advice on how to embrace their vulnerabilities as some of their greatest strengths. Her weekly videos are watched regularly by followers in over 12 countries. So you can learn more about Amy and her various offerings at truenaturewellness.com or confessionsofawarriorwoman.com. So welcome back, Amy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. So, yeah, and I just want to say before we start, you know, one of the things I really appreciate about you and your work through your vlogs and is that you share and you take things from your own life that you're struggling with and that you're coming up against, and you share your insights with everyone. And so I appreciate that you're really teaching. You're not teaching from a place where you're above it all, but you admit that you're human and vulnerable. And, you know, not all teachers have that approach. So I really appreciate that about you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I feel like I get so much out of it when I just am truthful and authentic to where I'm at, rather than trying to pretend I'm somewhere I'm not or I'm something I'm not.
Yeah, it comes through. So anyway, I appreciate that.
Thank
you.
So
yeah, you're welcome. So let's start off with expectations and the case for raising them for ourselves and others. And so maybe you can just tell us how this came to your attention recently about the show on NPR. And I'll put the link for people to be able to listen to that here as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, I guess it was about a month ago now. I was listening to This American Life on NPR. And they were talking about a young man who, when he was very young, when he was a little boy, had some form of cancer that actually caused him to lose his eyesight. And when he was, I don't even think he was 2 years old yet when he lost his eyesight, and his mother made a decision early on that she was not going to treat this young man, his name is Daniel, as a blind child, but she was going to raise him just as any other seeing child would be raised. So she didn't coddle him or try to do things for him. She let Daniel find his way, even though he couldn't see. And at first, when we hear that, it sounds like it might be a kind of cruel thing to do, but what we realized as we listened to her experience was that very early on, because she raised the expectations for her son Daniel, he started to develop a system of understanding and feeling the world around him, similar to echolocation that bats use. He would click his tongue, and by clicking his tongue, he could tell the surroundings in the room around him and actually find his way. So as any young two-year-old would, he would climb shelves and jump around and play, and she never got in the way of that. Even if sometimes he would bump into things and whatnot, she let him experiment. She let him find his way. What's interesting is you fast forward several decades, Daniel Kish, this individual, is now a grown man and is so good at the echolocation, he can actually ride a bicycle on a busy city street as a blind man without challenge or problem. And that kind of blew my mind. And it made
me
think about... it still kind of blows my mind. Sometimes I have challenges riding a bicycle properly down the street in a busy city area, and here's this man doing it gracefully without having the use of his eyes. And so for me, it just really made me do a double take and say, what are the expectations that we're putting on ourselves, and how are they changing the very course of our lives? And, you know, Daniel's case is very obvious with his eyes, but I think also on the emotional and sort of more feeling level, we're putting a lot of expectations on ourselves too. They may not be as obvious as Daniel's example, but I think they have just as strong an impact in a lot of ways if we say or believe certain things about ourselves from a very young age and we don't challenge those expectations, then we might very well be limiting ourselves well into our future lives.
Yeah. And because of you, because of doing this and you brought it to my attention through your vlog, I listened to the show as well. And I was really astounded by it. It was pretty mind-blowing and sort of reminded, but also, taught. I mean, that I didn't know how much other people's expectations of us could alter what we could do. You know, they gave an example about rats and things like that. That's also pretty amazing. But, you know, there's just, it's very powerful. So, yeah, it's just not something I think we typically tend to think about. So I'm glad you brought it up. So, what happens when we don't question our expectations?
Well, I think there's two sides of that coin when you look at that question. When we don't question our expectations, a lot of times if you think about the reason we put expectations on us, let's look at Daniel's case with his blindness. A lot of the reason we put these lower expectations on blind people that they're not going to be able to do things by themselves because they can't see, it's because we want to limit vulnerability. We don't want to have things be potentially unsafe or uncertain. As much as we might say we like change, in my experience, humans mm-hmm. like change. Humans like change when it's change that they want. They don't like change when it's change that's unpredictable or something they didn't choose. So we like to have things predictable. So when we lower our expectations, we're limiting our vulnerability. And so that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is when you lower your expectations, you might limit your vulnerability, but you're also going to limit your possibilities, your creativity, and the opportunity for unique innovations to arise out of creative tension. You know, when you try to make it a safe and controlled and consistent and predictable environment by saying, okay, well, if we just lower our expectations, then we won't ever get hurt and we won't ever expect much of ourselves, so we can't fail. But we also won't be able to succeed in a lot of ways because we'll be really cutting off the creative valve. So it's just a bit of give and take, and I think we need to start questioning what the expectations are we are setting on ourselves instead of just taking them as truth.
Yeah, right. That's a good point. And with others as well, say for parents or in partner relationships, you know, there's a way we can help to bring out the best or, you know, the most potential, I guess, in people in our lives.
Yeah, totally. And it's important to recognize, I don't think any of us are doing this with intent to harm. You know, we're not putting low expectations on a blind person because we want them to have an uncreative life or anything
right.
like that. We're doing it because that's just, we're wired, I think, to try and want to protect and, again, keep things controlled and safe as humans to a certain extent. That's how we're wired. And I see the value in that, but I also see the shortfall in that when we lower our expectations so much that we don't allow ourselves to explore, experience, and make mistakes, which is a big part of our evolution. We need to make mistakes in order to find our way.
Yeah, right. Good point. And with that, I think this would be a great time if you came up with some really good questions, I think, for us to ask ourselves in relation to raising our expectations or exploring our expectations and making room for them to be raised for ourselves and others. So it'd be great if you would go through those and we could dive a little deeper into this. And I would say to everyone, get your pencils ready, take notes. Or if you're listening, I guess you can percolate on it in the car or something. But yeah,
for sure. Yeah, so I like to work with questions rather than, you know, hard and fast, like this is what you should do, because questions really create open space for a person to energetically engage with the topic and to find their own way in it. So when I came across this idea of, you know, really raising our own expectations for ourselves or others, the very first question that I started to look at was, just very basic, where do I currently put expectations on myself without question? And so I'll say that again, where do I currently put expectations on myself without question? So a little side hint here, when you're asking yourself this question, these are probably things you may have never even thought about. You just always assumed that they were true. So, you know, I don't know, maybe as a kid you were always told you were an anxious kid. So you believed that you're just an anxious person and there's certain things you can't do because you're anxious. So that's what you believe, and you never question it. It could be, you know, more broad scale or global scale, where you are told you are a certain way because your skin color is a certain color, or your gender is a certain gender, or you're from a certain economic class and you're just told certain things are true about you because that's who you are. So where are we currently putting these expectations on ourselves without question? Usually these are things we've inherited from families, friends, circumstances, cultures, societies around us. So that's question one.
Okay.
Question two, once you have that list in front of you of the expectations that you don't question, question two is, does it still serve me to hold these expectations in place? So, okay, if we go back to that example, I was told I was an anxious child. Let's say that's the case. Is it still serving me to hold that in place, that, oh, I'm an anxious person? How is that serving? How is that playing out in my life right now? Chances are that's probably not a very empowering belief. And many of these lower expectations we hold tend to fall in that category in my experience. They're not very empowering. They're limiting in a way that's actually causing some disconnection now to our sense of self as we age and get older. So that's
mm-hmm.
the second question, is really evaluating, do these still serve me? And then take that a step further for the third question. Is it just as possible that the opposite of this expectation could be true? Is it just as possible that the opposite of this expectation could be true? This is where it gets kind of interesting. And I loved when I did this with myself. I was just like, well, okay, what if I wasn't that, but what if I was the exact opposite? So I'll give you a concrete example. When I first moved to California 6 years ago after living in New York City for 10 years, I was going to be coming here, basically starting a lot of my work from scratch again, yoga work, stuff like that, that mm-hmm. I had to build a client base out here again. And I had a certain way that I was. I was a good little girl, a workaholic. I was going to do what I needed to do until I got my business up again. So I went in with that sort of ambitious workaholic mode. And one day it just wasn't working. I was just kept hitting the pavement and nothing, every resume I handed out at every studio just wasn't working. It wasn't taking. So I said, well, okay, what if the exact opposite is true? What if I just relaxed and hung out on the beach for a day and just assumed everything was going to be okay? And it sounds kind of funny, but I did an experiment with it. And the day that I did that and I went on the beach was the first day I got my first gig here.
Oh,
and
wow.
I don't mean to share that example as just cross your fingers and wish hard enough and life will work
right.
for you. But what I think that example points to is we choose to believe certain things and we can choose then to not believe their opposite. So if you're believing something about yourself that's not serving, try on the opposite. See what it feels like. Maybe it's not as awkward or unusual or impossible as it might seem right now. So that's what that third question speaks to. Is it just as possible that the opposite of that expectation could be true? Notice it doesn't have to feel easy. I just asked if it was possible. And if you can get
right.
a yes to that question, your final question is the opposite possibility something I would actually like to be true? So if I was told I was anxious my whole life, would I like to be a confident, strong, not anxious person? Would I like that to be true? And if you get a yes to that, that is something you want to believe, then you have a clear path in front of you or of what kind of intention you want to set for your life moving forward.
Yeah, well, nice. And is there, I was going to ask you for an example, but you gave, well, either from yourself or with the client, but you actually gave a nice example of how it shifted, how it can shift when you explore your expectations this way. So that's great.
Yeah,
Thank you.
You're welcome. There's another really, really funny one, and this is another example of how I sort of break through to go to that other side of the expectation. I actually don't like being on camera. I don't like being in front of audiences so much. I'm very introverted. But I wanted to be working with people and getting my message out. So, you know, two years ago now almost, I decided I was going to do a video blog and do a
mm-hmm.
video every week because it was the exact thing that my lower expectations would have said I never would do. I'd never put myself on a video, and that would be so uncomfortable. And I went and I did it. And by doing that, I challenged that old expectation, and I also allowed myself to go right into the place where new innovations, new creativity could blossom. And it was just, it continues to be very invigorating. And, you know, I won't lie, the first video I did probably took me like 4 hours to create, even though it was 7 minutes long. But, you know, with time I got more comfortable and better at it. But if we don't challenge that first impulse of, oh, I can't do that, or, oh, that's not me, or I'm not smart enough, good enough, strong enough, whatever we say, if we don't challenge it, we're going to be living a pretty small, caged existence if we are never challenging those expectations we've put on ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and that actually takes us right into the related topic of changing patterns, I think. So that's, you know, with safety and security, which we can talk about later. But if we get into, so we explore our expectations, things that we may not have really thought about much before, and sort of take steps there. So now if we have patterns that we'd like to change, and I wanted to ask you, when we're talking about patterns, are those the same to you as habits, or is that something different?
That's a good question. I think a pattern could have a variety of habits within it, right? You could have a pattern
okay.
of, I don't know, insecurity, and that pattern could have a habit of not talking to people at parties. It could be a habit of not taking risks in your job. It could be a habit of, not taking the step to ask someone out or whatever it is. But the overall pattern is something like a feeling, like an insecurity in that case. But the habits could be any myriad of things underneath them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's actually a good example. It made me think of the ocean and the wave, a wave being one of the habits in the, you know,
yeah,
in the ocean.
That's a good metaphor for it.
Like
that. Yeah, that works
yeah.
well.
So if we have a pattern that we'd like to look at and feel like we want to start shifting that pattern, what is the first step in changing a pattern?
Well, I like to say the first step on any journey is really congratulating yourself that you're aware of the pattern. Which
yeah.
seems kind of silly, but I think it's actually pretty huge. Because it's a vulnerable moment when you realize, I'm assuming the pattern you're trying to change is one you don't particularly like about yourself. So the very first step is to really set a tone of positivity and be like very complimentary and compassionate to yourself that good on me that I'm standing here in this uncomfortableness and I'm willing to look at how I could change this pattern. That's a really key first step. Without that, the whole path forward could be one exercise in self-hate or not liking yourself. And that certainly is not going to contribute to a new positive pattern coming into place. So it's very important that we first acknowledge ourselves and congratulate ourselves for being aware of the pattern. Assuming you get that down, the next thing is to shift from just an idea of hoping that you'll change the pattern to stepping into faith that you will change the pattern. And do you need a little more clarity on the difference between the hope and the faith?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think it'd be great if you could tell us the difference and the difference between hope and faith and maybe how you see we can cultivate more faith.
Okay. So hope is, it's not a bad thing. It's but it's like the preliminary step to faith. Hope is kind of when we keep things in a place of possibility, but we don't actually do anything about it. So, you know, like if we go back to like, this is someone who just stays in that place of congratulating themselves. Like, hey, I'm really aware that I eat this bad stuff and I really don't take care of myself in terms of what I eat. But then they don't do anything about it. They just stay in that place of like awareness and hope that one day it'll get better or hope that if they just pray hard enough or think hard enough, it's going to shift. But faith is when we actually have hope and then we activate it. We act upon it, taking it to an active step into, it's like you're taking an active step into the unknown towards the ultimate possibility that you want to create. So you know how we have that phrase, leap of faith? You take a leap of faith. You don't take a leap of hope. You take a leap of faith. we get that. There's something active in this idea of faith. We're not waiting for outside validation to move forward when we have faith. I'm kind of an advocate when you're trying to transition from hope to faith that there's a certain amount of value in just ripping the Band-Aid off. If we wait until we feel ready, that might be a very, very long wait. Maybe an endless wait. Typically, when you are ready or when you are needing change, you're never going to always feel ready for it. I mean, I bet if we interviewed any parent today and said, when you became a parent, were you 100% ready for it? I think we'd get a very small percentage that said, yes, I was absolutely ready for it. You know, when we take big steps in our life, you won't feel ready. If you're really stepping into your potential, there is going to be an element of vulnerability, and it's required because vulnerability, as Brené Brown says, I don't know if you're familiar with her, she writes a lot on vulnerability and shame. She has a great quote that vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity and innovation. So if we're planning on moving forward into our potential and changing a pattern, you better believe you're going to feel uncomfortable and you're going to need to take that leap of faith. So ripping the Band-Aid off sometimes is really there's value in it because just sometimes it's not feasible to think that we're going to feel completely secure when we take that first step.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the heroes and heroines journey, right?
Yeah,
taking that first step into the unknown. So then you talk about also the importance of including the body. So could you tell us about that and how best to do that in this process?
Yeah, for sure. So So assume we congratulated ourselves, assume we've agreed to take a leap of faith. It's really important, the next step, to have both the mind and the body need to be on board with the change that you're trying to create. So, you know, you might have an example of this for yourself. I know I have many where, you know, when you want to make a change, a pattern, and you keep telling, I'll give a really silly example. Oh, I'm not going to eat the chocolate. I'm not going to eat the chocolate. I'm not going to eat the chocolate. I can say that to myself over and over again. But unless I make a shift on a deeper level than just the thought, there's a good chance I'm probably going to go eat that chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to find a way to get my body to buy in as much as my mind does. Because if the body isn't buying in, it's probably still craving the chocolate. So food seems silly, but it's a real concrete example, so it helps us see the point here. My mind can say whatever it wants to say, but if the body is still operating on a different frequency, the body's frequency is going to interrupt with the thought frequency that's trying to create a new pattern. So I have to get buy-in with the body as well. So it's a little bit of fake it till you make it, a little bit.
Uh-huh,
What I like to do, like you probably have heard of, I know you have like affirmations and visualizations working on that level with changing patterns?
Yes.
Okay. So that, this idea of affirmation is, you know, saying what you want and it will come true. We have to take it a step deeper than that. And once you find an affirmation that you want to believe in, you can say it, but then give yourself about 15, 16, 17 seconds. I believe it's actually 17 seconds is all you need to change your neural pathway in the brain. So you need to give about that amount of time for your body to feel what it would feel like to hold that new belief. So let's say you were working on being more confident and you wanted to hold a new belief about it's okay for me to step into new situations. I am safe and I'm able to explore new opportunities for growth. Let's say you were working on something like that. If I just said it but didn't give my body a chance to digest it, won't work so well. But if I say that, close my eyes, and then ask myself, what would it feel like if that was true right now? How would that feel in my body? And so when we take an example like that, often what will happen for people is the body will start to feel different. They'll actually start to feel a sense of excitement, not unlike butterflies in your stomach when you're ready to try something new. Or people describe often a tingling in their hands or their feet, or a lightness, an excitement in their chest. When we own it on this physiological level, you literally start to change the neural pathways, and that's why it's so critical to have body on board. Otherwise, you're only doing half of the change in terms of the pattern. You're only getting the mind on board, but the body is still going to cause resistance unless it's got buy-in as well.
Yeah, that's such a key, and I think that's probably left out of a lot of, well-meaning self-help type situations is not including the body. And in that way, that's really great. You give such a concrete example. And is that something that you would just, how would you, I mean, I know it's probably not a totally right and wrong way to do it, but would you think it would be beneficial just to say it once and feel it for 15, 17, 20 seconds, whatever, a few times a day, or to sort of repetitively, you know, do it for a couple of minutes or?
Yeah, great question. Well, there's a couple things. I think the more you do it, the more that neural pathway is going to become a super highway instead of a side back road that your mind takes. So it's frequency and consistency is important. But I'll give you a really interesting example. I think I was working with this for myself around abundance, like financial abundance. And I don't remember the exact affirmation, but I said the affirmation. And usually about three deep breaths is about 17 seconds, give or take. So I said the affirmation, and then I took those three deep breaths, and I said, how would it feel once I have all that abundance that I'm desiring? How will that feel? And the very first feeling I actually had, and this might sound strange, I had a sense of I wanted to cry. And it was kind of like, wow, what's going on? That's really interesting. And what the exercise allowed me to see was that my own fear and even like grief or sadness around the abundance was blocking me from getting it. Mm-hmm. So having done that time of just taking those three breaths, I actually let myself have a good cry that day. And then when I went back and said the affirmation again and took three deep breaths, that I had removed that fear and that sadness around, oh my gosh, what if this doesn't come true, it allowed me to open up to the possibility of the excitement behind it. There's an old saying, one of my teachers used to say, that grief is the precursor to joy. And so sometimes when we create this opportunity for us to feel in the body how that new pattern will feel even before it arrives, you start to process some of the emotions that might be the ones blocking you from getting where you want to go.
That is a great example. And just when you mentioned that, I totally reminded me of, I don't know, are you familiar with Dr. Mario Martinez by any chance? The Mind-Body Code.
Mm-hmm.
He's written a book called The Mind-Body Code, but he also has a DVDs about it. And he also is a big proponent of you have to engage the body, you know, with the mind, just like you were talking about, in order for real change to happen. And he gives an example. It's funny because your abundance example all of a sudden reminded me that actually a lot of times we think we want more income or something, let's say, as one form of abundance. But in reality, our nervous system is not really prepared to have a lot more, and we have to actually gradually work up to it. Like you hit grief, but other people, he said it sounds strange, but there may be a lot of anxiety about receiving a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there are a lot of hidden assumptions. So little by little, if you do work, as you were saying, if you work with the body and the affirmations, that's really how the shifts can happen, and it's not just a mental situation. But it's funny that sometimes he said joy is actually hard, or abundance or more, you know, is actually hard for many of us to take in. We have to do it in increments.
Yeah, you do have to build up your tolerance. It sounds crazy, but, you know, because we all think we want it and we want it yesterday. But the reality is I've experienced this very recently in my last year. I've been doing this kind of adding the feeling component. How's it going to feel my body over the last year? And, I mean, it's been working some miracles for me, but it's been fascinating to watch how the adjustment of the things that you wanted your whole life coming into play, coming into your life, actually is a kind of stress still. And we have to know how to process that too, the good stress that comes in, like, oh, great, everything's going awesome, and I'm still having a little bit of this anxiety around it. So
yeah.
We need to include the body, because the body holds, the cells hold memories. That it's kind of like, so, you know, if you've, God forbid, you've ever had a trauma, you know, a lot of people have like post-traumatic stress disorder. They'll hear a loud noise and it reminds them of whatever the trauma was. The body holds memories. And if we ask our mind to take on a new script and a new way to believe, and then we leave the body behind, you're going to create a lot of divisiveness within your own consciousness, your body believing one thing and your mind believing another. And you're going to cause yourself a lot of fragmentation and feeling of disconnect. And at some point or another, those feelings are going to have to get involved. And when you do it this way with the body, through meditation and visualization like this, like you said, you can slowly ease the person into creating a fertile ground for the new reality to take place. If we took a plant metaphor, you know, I'm not going to pull out the old weeds from my garden, but leave all the toxic waste material in the soil and then just plant a new seed there and expect it to grow. I've got to refurbish the soil with clean, fertile, proper nutrients for my new seed to grow. And if I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to furnish a new garden there.
Yeah, that's a good example, too. I love those clear metaphors. It's really helpful. And it sounds it's so doable to take three deep breaths. Imagine how you feel. You know, you'll feel with that. It's not like, okay, you have to do, you know, half an hour, twice a day. You know, it's very doable that we can just, as we're driving or we're in line or we're at our desk, you know, there are these moments when we can even fit in things like this that are really helpful. So
yeah, it goes to that. It goes to that old saying. It's simple. It's just not always easy, because if we go back to the expectations, we sometimes are living in a world where the general vibration is telling us the exact opposite. Life is hard, it sucks, there's never enough money, people are bad people, blah, 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 whatever the things are the world is telling us. So it's not always going to feel easy to stand up to that and take your three deep breaths and say, no, I'm going to visualize a reality where it's all different. That's actually, it's pretty amazing how much courage that can take. But it's totally simple and totally available to us in the moment. But we do have to go back to our leap of faith. We have to take that leap of faith to say, you know what? There, even though it might be a minuscule small part of me that really owns this right now, I know something else is available to me. I know there is another possibility available to me than whatever is going on right now. And I'm choosing to root into that no matter how small it is, because that's my ticket to changing this from the inside out. I can't wait for the world to be ready for me to change. I can't wait for the world to validate me to change in a certain way. I've got to start it from within.
Nice. Yeah. And just to go from there to, there's another piece in the pattern changing. This, what we've just been talking about, sounds like a huge key piece, but then there's one more piece to this that you talk about, which is we can also run into blind spots when we're trying to change a pattern. So if you could just speak to that.
Those are the most humbling ones.
Yes.
We all have great intentions. We're going along. We're trying to change our pattern. We're involving our body, our mind. We're taking those leaps of faith, and then we're still hitting the obstacle, we're still hitting the wall, and we just can't figure it out. And the thing is, we don't know what we don't know. And so, you know, you're not going to go to a two-year-old and say, like, oh, make me dinner tonight, I'm going to take the night off, it's your turn. You're not going to do that. Like, there's things that we just don't know. We either haven't learned them, and that might sound like a silly example, but a lot of these inner processes, these inner ways of holding right space for your own evolution, we weren't taught them. Our parents weren't taught them. Maybe their parents weren't taught them. We have to help each other out as we go along. Otherwise, we're going to have a heck of a time trying to get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. So we have to, the next step along with this is that we have to surround ourselves with loving people who can support ourselves in helping us see our blind spots. So I just want to pull that apart a little bit and not just say, like, oh, surround yourself by your friends and your family. Because actually sometimes your friends and family aren't necessarily the best people that can support you in this realm. They may be, but they may not be. What I'm suggesting or advocating is that you find a deliberate support system of some kind. Surround yourself with teachers, mentors, people that inspire you, people that have already gone through the change that perhaps you're trying to create for yourself. So people who aren't afraid to stand up to you and be like, hey, I'm calling you out. You're doing X, Y, Z again. Sometimes our friends and family can do that, but sometimes they can't, because they might be coming from the same system of old expectations that we were coming from. So it's important to have a deliberate support network of teachers, mentors, a spiritual group, a meditation group. It could be whatever flavor you like, but a group that's deliberately about supporting each other on their path of personal growth. The other thing around how to best get support from people is, it sounds really simple, but you just have to ask. You don't make the assumption that people know what you need, and you have to dare yourself to be vulnerable enough to admit, hey, this might be really obvious to everyone else, but this blind spot is not obvious to me. I don't know when I'll give an example, like for me, gratefully I'm overcoming this now, but I had workaholic tendencies, and sometimes I just wouldn't even see it. I would just be going and going and going. And so I asked certain people that I trusted to call me out when I was in it and I couldn't see it. And it felt silly, and I had to be vulnerable saying, hey, can you tell me when I'm working like a dog and I can't see it? Because I felt a little bit ashamed that I couldn't see it on my own. Mm-hmm. But having had the ability to be vulnerable enough to ask that helped me to change that pattern. So we do need to have vulnerability when we ask for support. And then a really sort of interesting last point with getting support from others, this might sound strange, but in addition to you having mentors, consider mentoring someone yourself who's maybe a little bit further, a few steps behind where you are on the path, let's say. Because when you take that seat of the teacher or to be the one in service to another, there's nothing quite as potent as that in terms of evolving your own spiritual practice. Mm. So, because they can really, you see things from a fresh perspective, perhaps a not as tainted perspective, and it puts you in the role of a deeper ownership of your own process when you're leading for another. So that's an excellent way to also get support from others.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, the mentorship. That's
yeah.
very helpful. Yeah, you really you teased out the whole blind spots, I mean, the support really, really well. And so now, so we may have all those things to help in place to help us change a pattern, and that may be well and enough, you know, to help us shift and be on our way. But sometimes it's hard for us to move forward through a pattern if it doesn't feel safe. And you sort of addressed this before, but maybe if you could just talk a little bit more about that and how we can look at safety and security in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one for me was kind of a game changer. And from what a few of my other people that I've worked with have said the same for them. You know, I would get to a certain part in my personal growth process and, you know, I'd be doing my change and doing all the things in the feeling and feeling it in my body and doing all the quote-unquote right things. But I'd still get to this place where I go, oh, I can't do anymore. I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe anymore. So I started to look at, well, what is that about? You know, do I really not feel safe or is something else going on there? So I started to tease apart what's the difference between safety and security. And the best way I can describe this is metaphorically. If we think of a peach, the inside of the peach has a really firm, strong pit. And that pit is responsible for, you know, you put that in the ground, that can grow a whole new peach tree. It's got the very essence of what that fruit is about. And in fact, what that whole tree is about right inside. So even if the peach gets bruised or bumped or even devoured, which it often would, the pit is still unharmed. And that, to me, is kind of representative of what safety is. Safety is an inner feeling that even if things don't go my way, I'm still going to be okay. So even if that whole peach just disintegrates and dissolves, which sometimes in life, the plan that you had disintegrates and dissolves in front of your eyes, and you know what? You're still going to be okay. That's an inner feeling. It's a choice we might make to align with it, but it's an inner feeling that even if things don't go my way, I'm going to be okay. Security, we picture that peach again. Imagine I have this beautiful, precious peach, and it's fuzzy and delicious smelling, and it just is perfect. And I don't want anyone to touch it. I don't want anyone to harm it or even brush against it in any way that could potentially be harmful. So I'm going to put a little box, glass box around my peach so no one can touch it. That glass box, that's security. Security is when we minimize vulnerability by putting up external boundaries. And security is, it can change, right? Safety is a steadfast, always the pit is the pit. But the security, I could put it in the glass box. I could maybe put it behind a picket fence. I could put it in a bowl. There's lots of ways. I could have high security or low security, like you have security protections on your computer. And a lot of time when we say we don't feel safe, what we're really meaning is I don't like being vulnerable. I've hit my tolerance point for vulnerability here. I want to stop. And that's okay if that's true, but don't confuse it with safety. You're saying, I want high security right now because I want my vulnerability to be minimized. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. But then if you want to make progress, at some point you're going to have to let the security be more minimal. You're going to have to say, okay, if the peach wants to experience the world, I'm going to have to let people touch it. I'm going to have to let people smell how delicious it is. It doesn't mean I have to let them take a bite out of me, but if I want to have interaction with the world, I can't live in a glass box all the time. So if we can understand that difference, that we're not, our safety truly isn't threatened, but it's more of our tolerance for vulnerability is being tested. If we can see that subtle difference, chances are you'll start to be able to have a conversation where you can negotiate building up a higher tolerance for vulnerability. And I'll give you a real solid example outside of the peach, like a real real person example.
Okay, when I love the peach example.
People, I know, peaches are great. They are a profoundly perfect example for that. But imagine like you're a yoga student. And I've actually seen this many times with yoga students where they'll say, like, oh, I can't do XYZ pose. I don't know how to do it. I'm not strong enough. I can't go in handstand, whatever it is. And then I actually, you know, sometimes I'll sneak it in. We'll be teaching a class, and they'll be so focused and in their breath and in the flow, and then they all of a sudden find themselves in a pose they didn't think they could do. And to see the look on their face when they're going, oh my God, I can do it. And they see and they feel for the first time that they're actually safe. Then they realize, that's the moment they realize, they were never not safe. They were just not able to tolerate the vulnerability it took to get there. And that's a profound moment. And that's why when we talk about the body and the mind being on board, that's a place where the body proves to the mind that it's how important it is, right? If the body can sort of override what the mind is telling it, you see how powerful the body is in that example. And I see that all the time in yoga classes where people go, oh, my God, I didn't know I could do that pose. And it's when we let ourselves get out of that old expectation, you know, we go full circle back to the expectations. If we can get ourselves to not be resonating with the old expectations, you can fly a lot higher than you may realize.
That's very true, and you reminded me again what you said reminded me of something that I used to be so afraid to do. You know, where you put your elbows on your knees and you balance. I'm forgetting the name of that.
Crow pose.
Yeah. And I used to say, I can't do it, and I would get frustrated, and I wouldn't want to try. But I was also afraid. I mean, it seems completely ridiculous, but I was afraid of falling on my face or something.
It's totally common.
It's very real, yeah. And I just was convinced I couldn't do it. And one day I did it. And it's amazing. Like you were saying, the ramifications, I mean, someone listening might be thinking, well, okay, so you did a yoga pose, big deal. But it's amazing how once you do it and you embody it, like you said, how much it carries out into life in general off the mat.
Oh, my gosh. The mat, yeah, I agree with you, because the yoga's never, for me, it's never been about the poses. The poses and the practice on the mat, it's just one giant metaphor for life.
Yeah.
And how you approach your practice on the mat, and I've seen this time and again, not only in my own life, but in hundreds of students at this point, how you approach your practice on the mat is often how you're going to approach difficulties or challenges in your life. If you bulldoze through them and you don't listen to the feedback from your body, good chance that's what you're probably doing off the mat as well. If you never take risks on the mat and you constantly play safe and stay in your safety zone, that's probably what you do in life as well. So for me, the practice is just like, it's like training camp for how I can build up that tolerance for vulnerability in body and mind at the same time, in sync, together, feeling and being in the present moment with the experience of what's it really like to hold yourself in the unknown. Because that's what life is. We like to pretend we know what's going to happen and everything's in our control, but that's one big illusion. And when we realize that and we find ways that we can be comfortable with the uncomfortable, you're going to be living a life that's a lot more in line with what you hope for yourself. Because if you want to go places different than where you are now, you're going to probably have to do something differently than what you're doing now, which means you're going to have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. This has been really, once again, Amy, this has been really good information. And so I guess before we wrap up the show, I'd just love to know if there's anything we haven't touched on or that you'd like to make sure you express, or any parting words.
Well,
do you want to share?
What I would like people to know is that, you know, it's easy sometimes in today's world when we talk about things like this to make them sound all fun and easy and wax poetic. But, you know, if anything resonated for people today when they were listening to this, my advice to them would be to really go back, write those questions down that we talked about, and do some self-inquiry. Because it's one thing to, like, let's think of this, listening to this podcast as step one. It's up to you now, who's ever listening out there, to then take it to the next level and own it. I think we live in a very information-heavy world, and a lot of us are really good at taking information in, but a lot of us fall off track when it comes to embodying or integrating that information in our life. So I would just really encourage people to own this, to go home, journal on those questions, think about what we talked about today, and see how they might start adjusting some of their expectations to change patterns in their own life.
Yeah, and not to be, you know, to not be afraid to maybe get a little bit bruised like the peach, you know, in the process. Just know that that's part of the process, and like you said, they'll persevere through it.
Amen.
Amy, thank you for sharing your processes and your insights with us. It's been lovely.
Yeah, you are most welcome. Thank you for having me and for creating this space for people to connect and share ideas. It's wonderful. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Oh, thanks so much. And once again, too, you can find Amy. You can find out more about Amy at truenaturewellness.com or confessionsofawarriorwoman.com. So thank you, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.